Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Tonight's program features Ira Harrett, and he's going to talk about the austerity myth. How can we move from the current austerity legislation to investing in our future? This program was recorded on April the 19th of 2015 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. We will have an introduction by Rita Norton, and then KKFI's own Mike Murphy will introduce Mr. Harrett. We'll have our usual format today, and we'll have about 35 to 40 minutes of the talk, and then we'll take a short break, and then we'll have questions from the audience to wind up the show. So here we go. Here's the first introduction for tonight's All Souls Forum.
Good morning. I'm Rita Norton, a member of the Forum Committee that organizes these platforms for the discussion of significant issues, especially those that involve ethical values in the contemporary world. This morning, Mike Murphy gets the honors for introducing our speaker. Mike?
Good morning, everybody. I've had the pleasure of knowing Ira Harrett for well over a decade now. I first got to know Ira through what was then the Kansas City Iraq Task Force, a coalition of organizations such as PeaceWorks, Holy Family Catholic Worker, the American Friends Service Committee, and concerned individuals. So at that time, I really got to know Ira well and looked up to him for direction, for inspiration, and I have never been disappointed in that area. His passion, his commitment, and his creativity. He's always finding new and creative ways to further the advancement of peace in our community and in our world. So I know a lot of times we always come to these things and are still thinking about where we were or where we have to be next, but I would ask you to please give your full attention and welcome to Ira Harrett. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike, for that kind introduction. I don't know if I deserve it, but thank you. And thank you to Mike and to Rita and to the Forum Committee for inviting me to speak at the forum this morning. Before I want to begin, I want to acknowledge and express my appreciation for the people kind of upon which this presentation is based. This presentation will be about the Move the Money Listening Project, and we had the privilege of speaking with 46 community leaders who donated their time and shared their knowledge and experience with us. I also want to acknowledge the hard work of the many AFSC volunteers who met in 43 sessions with these leaders to discuss important issues of today. This morning, I'll briefly explain why and how we conducted the Listening Project, provide an overview of what we heard, and discuss how we can respond. And then I'll invite questions. The American Friends Service Committee, concerned about the tragic impact of the Great Recession over the past 7 years, and the rise in unemployment and underemployment, and the increasing poverty and suffering, and the use of the economic crisis to attack social programs for those in need, caused us to be outraged by this misguided and maybe misdirected focus on the deficit instead of the real causes of the recession. And we were surprised by the narrow public discourse around spending and revenue policy and budget priorities. This discourse left out community voices, it left out the impact of budget cutting, it left out the fact that the cuts to valuable programs were taking place at a need when the need for those programs was increasing. Before presenting the findings of the Listening Project, I want to just take a moment to offer a context to consider these matters. More important than statistics and masses of facts that might prove this point is true or that point is true, the right has been very successful at popularizing larger stories about the truth. And these stories focused on the incapability of government to serve the community, the laziness of the poor, that there are these job-creating billionaire heroes, and that we need austerity to fix our problems. And added to that is a subtle appeal to racism embedded in our culture. So in response to all those things, providing more and more facts or statistics or arguing logically a case, those things kind of just disappear in the public mind. Also, those stories are fed and nurtured by armies of PR people that are just pumping out the corporate elite message. In response to all of these things, though, we created the Move the Money Listening Project, whose purpose is to lift up community voices and community need into the debate so that our concerns and our needs and interests can be heard. We want to tell the story about the budget, the real stories, about the budget, revenue policy, the need for the community to speak out, and the needs for government to counter injustices. We hope that this campaign will inspire you to speak out and to tell your story and to contribute to changing the dialogue and the narrative around. And so we sought out community leaders to identify the needs in the community and to raise those voices up. But we also sought the goal of building relationships with all of these different organizations that these leaders came from. So to accomplish this task, we identified important questions to discuss with community leaders. Our intent was to to learn from them, to help them think more deeply about these issues of budget priorities, revenue, community need, the impact of federal, state, and local budget cutting on those needs, military spending, austerity, and policies and budget priorities that would improve the lives of area residents. Our process was more than filling out a questionnaire and recording the answers. The goal was a dialogue, to have an exchange to help all involved learn about and understand the issues more deeply. We wanted to have meaningful, thoughtful conversations with the community, with community leaders about the realities they see and the real policies that would improve area residents' lives and the health of our community. After developing our questions, we identified leaders who have insight into community needs and the impact of budget cutting. We sought people who work in a wide range of areas, from early childhood education to senior services, from mental health to transportation, from individuals working on disability issues to health care providers, from community organizers to faith leaders and more. We listened to 46 community leaders from 43 organizations. About a third of those worked in direct service provision, organizations like Operation Breakthrough and Restart. Another third worked in groups representing community organizations, such as Communities Creating Opportunity and Moore Squared. The remainder consisted of groups with a more general focus, who worked in government and religious, or groups that worked in government and religious settings. Mid-America Regional Council and United Way are examples of those. Numerous times in this process, I felt like I was gaining the equivalent of a master's or a doctorate degree about our community. We learned about gaining access, mental health funding, and charity care. We learned about the tenuous web of support needed to prevent families from becoming homeless. We learned about the statistics of poverty in Johnson County and the inner city. We were honored that so many leaders, in many cases who had devoted much of their working lives to service, were willing to sit down with us and share an hour or two of their time. The first objective of the Listening Project was to create and document the dialogue we had had with the community leaders. Our intention was not to create, again, a statistical analysis or an academic report, but rather to capture the main ideas of what we heard, the things that leaders observed and shared. There was much agreement, but there was also some diversity, and from different perspectives, focus on different concerns. And there were some questions that leaders did not feel comfortable responding to. We have distributed a two-page executive summary of the report. The full report is available online, as well as the list of questions we asked, the list of leaders, and other supporting materials. And you see the website on the slide, and it's also in the executive summary. The creation of the Listening Project report, though, is only a means to an end. The end is to stimulate more debate and dialogue around budget and revenue policy. We began the project focusing on the federal budget, but as we held listening sessions, we soon saw that the same destructive austerity budget-cutting directive is also functioning at the state and local levels. We also recognized and discovered that about a third of the federal budget spending, discretionary budget, is actually expended by states and local governments. This next stage of the project is to share what we have heard and to listen in public forums to the experiences of those attending. We do this to empower and mobilize more and more community members to step up, tell their story, and work to make budget, revenue, and public policy serve community needs rather than only those of the rich and powerful. We will work in partnership with leaders with whom we worked and others, and together support initiatives to challenge injustices and improve the lives of area residents. But one of the first things we discussed with leaders was their ideas about what makes for a healthy, vibrant society. The slide lists many of the attributes that were important to leaders. The responses generally fell into three categories. The first, the most tangible part of a healthy society, was meeting basic human needs, things like shelter, food, and health care. According to participants' responses, affordable housing and safe neighborhoods was particularly important. Another set of responses discussed the importance of education, employment, transportation, recreation, and infrastructure. These were seen as being provided by sources outside the home. Education was one topic mentioned repeatedly, including good quality early childhood education and after-school childcare. Employment was also very high on the list. Meaningful work paying a just wage was seen as a major part of a healthy society. Other responses emphasized the more or the less tangible parts of a healthy community. Having respect and acceptance for all citizens was seen as a part of how we create community. Diversity and its celebration, peace and harmony, and the recognizing the dignity of each person were perceived as fundamental to a vision of a healthy society. We heard about the tremendous unmet needs in the Kansas City Metro, taking various forms. We heard about the homeless man you see on the corner, the second grader who you see waiting at the bus stop whose school lunch might be her best meal, the mom working 50 plus hours a week without benefits at a fast food restaurant, taking two buses to drop off her son for childcare, and then sometimes having her boss tell her shift has been canceled. And underemployed father who had a great job and now makes half of what he had been making and is struggling to pay his Johnson County mortgage. These people are working hard, but they are not getting the help they need to get out of poverty, according to the community leaders who see poverty and human suffering every day. The reality is hard for those needing help. One leader observed, for the working poor, it takes one catastrophic event to push them into homelessness. A sick child, a broken car, can't find childcare, or cold weather and high utility bills. We heard heart-wrenching stories, statistics, and reports of daily hardship. These discussions provided insight into the fragility of the lives of many area residents. And perhaps surprising to some, these included growing numbers of people living in the suburbs who had had middle-class lifestyles, but now find themselves impacted by loss of employment and unable to pay monthly expenses. But we heard about people wanting to provide for themselves and their families. They wanted good jobs and education, not handouts. We heard that, quote, more and more people are trying to survive on poverty wages and need assistance. And one leader emphatically stated, if a person in America is willing to work a full-time job, the wage, no matter their race, geography, or age, should be a livable wage. This is the battle, the civil rights battle of the 21st century. Further, we heard recognition that the failure of Kansas and Missouri to embrace Medicaid expansion was a failure to meet significant unmet needs for health care and other services. One leader said, no Medicaid expansion in Missouri means that 300,000 working people will have no health insurance. While another said, failure to pass Medicaid expansion really hurts because Medicaid provides a gateway to services and housing, and without it, many families won't qualify for much needed services. And we were told that as a community and nation, we seem unwilling to make the investments that could reduce poverty and increase self-sufficiency and lead to a brighter future. Instead, we are paying the greater price to deal with the resulting problems of poor education, crime, illness, community deterioration, hunger, and incarceration. In discussions about the impact of budget cutting, Head Start cuts were one of the most frequently mentioned negative impacts. It was cited as an extremely successful program whose cuts ultimately cost more than it saved. One listening session produced the following narrative about budget cutting impacts. Sequestration Head Start cuts were followed by the loss of comprehensive services. One of the things that is important about Head Start is it's not just providing childcare. There's a whole series of health, mental health, housing, and other kinds of services that go along with supporting families. Followed by the loss of comprehensive services, childcare, transportation, mental health services. Over 200 children and their families could not be served by this leader's agency because of sequestration. Parents were put in a very bad position. Some had to quit their jobs to care for their children, having to go back on welfare to survive. The rug was pulled out from under them, they were doing well, and it was taken away from them. Frequently mentioned was the extremely negative impact of cutting food stamps. SNAP, a crucial safety net program. Cuts to mental health programs were mentioned with some frequency as particularly damaging budget cuts. These cuts increase the tendency for mental health patients to wind up in the U.S. penal system with significant cost and no meaningful treatment. Though I've heard statistics that prisons now are the largest provider of mental health services, even though those services are inadequate. Working families are walking a financial tightrope in every community. We heard numerous stories of people working two or three jobs to make ends meet, leaving them little time to spend with their families. Too many families were hovering around the poverty line, leading very stressful lives, simply trying to survive. Many leaders told us it was getting much harder, almost impossible, for working families and the working poor to get ahead. Recent studies have also shown that the U.S., the land of opportunity, is actually one of the most difficult countries for people to change their economic status and rise from poverty to middle-class life. Many families and individuals are impacted by budget cuts, and this has an impact on their self-image, on their mental health, on issues like domestic violence. Several groups mentioned an increase in domestic violence caused by unemployment. One pastor said the gap between the wealth and everyone else has widened so much that she wondered how much longer we would have a middle class. In discussing Pentagon spending, almost all leaders who responded told us that current U.S. discretionary spending priorities did not meet community needs. Most felt that Pentagon spending was much too high. Many made this assessment while recognizing that we need to defend ourselves. One leader stated that we should be able to defend our shores, but the defense should not include building of nations at the expense of poor, especially people of color, in this nation. Many leaders were shocked that almost 60% of the U.S. discretionary budget goes to Pentagon spending. Many commented that we should reduce the excessive billions of dollars going to fund overseas military bases, planes even the Pentagon does not want, and other waste. Instead, local leaders felt we should use the funds on education, healthcare, housing, community needs. One leader commented on the amount of Pentagon spending. This is sad. There's a boatload of waste in military spending. Do we need 10 different kinds of fighter planes? We need to stop giving blank checks to fight wars. Others commented, we don't need to defend the whole world. Why so many bases all over the world? We just need to defend the homeland. Young people can't go to college. That makes us vulnerable. Other countries are educating their children. Our tax dollars are in the wrong place. These priorities are not those of our community. Revenue policy was too political a topic for some leaders, but all those participants who did comment stated a need for a fair tax system, including closing tax loopholes for corporations and the wealthy. Many commented that the tax code is written to benefit corporations, and that the wealthy, benefit corporations and the wealthy, and stated this must change. Many commented that those who have the most should pay their fair share. Another participant stated corporate welfare is much larger than individual welfare. Others told us we need to stop subsidizing businesses that pay low wages, providing little or no benefits, forcing their workers to supplement the food stamps and Medicaid at taxpayers' expense. Other revenue policies suggestions were made. No cap on Social Security. Everyone should pay into the system for a full year. You may or may not know that there is a cap of $118,500 on wage earners' income, so that in some cases, people, millionaires and billionaires, pay for, I think, February 20th or something is the no more Social Security payments day for many of those in those upper brackets. One leader said America is supposed to be the land of opportunity for all, not a select few. The American dream is becoming the impossible dream. It is no longer available to most Americans. Americans need a livable wage, a good and affordable education, and decent health care to have a chance at the American dream. Many express the sentiment that taxes are paid to make society good for everyone. Next, we discussed the austerity narrative. Many leaders attributed the acceptance of the austerity narrative by the media and Congress to the fact that it furthers the interests of the wealthy 1% and large corporations. One leader commented, "There are two different economies, the economy of the rich and the economy of the poor. It is austerity and budget cutting killing one, the poor, and helping the other, the rich." Another thought that trickle-down effect has sold out our country. It has created cheap labor, moral decay, sacrifice of our children, exploiting our savings, and unlivable wage. 40% of wealth held by 1%. Big business can afford to tell the story that the way they want and send the message they want to send. Many of our politicians have been bought. We need to develop the critical thinking skills to see to the truth. Others spoke about how some have been convinced to believe the simple narrative that we need to cut to live within our budget. What is not realized is that cuts create more problems. People don't realize the impact of cuts. Leaders also commented on austerity proponents appealing to a blame the poor narrative and those living on the dole attitude. Others saw a decrease in values, a failure to recognize that we must be my brother's keeper. Other leaders suggested people don't see spending as investment in the future, education, healthcare, and infrastructure. They can see short-term savings, but it's hard for them to see the long-term loss. They lack a sense of the common good. Almost all community leaders, except those who could not or chose not to comment due to organizational concerns, expressed a strong feeling that federal budget priorities need to change to improve the lives of area residents. Many said we need a real discussion about how our taxes are spent. We have an abundance of funds. The problem is how we choose to spend our tax dollars. One leader reflecting the comments of many put it this way: we must fund programs that empower people through education, training, and economic development. Another commented, the highest priority in federal spending should be the good of the people, both now and in the future. We are all in this together. The most commonly mentioned changes in federal budget priorities were to increase funding for education, healthcare, housing, transportation, and jobs. Most saw these kinds of expenditures as investments with payoffs now and in the future. For example, one leader explained, education pays dividends, and an educated population gets better jobs, makes more money, makes better voters. Another commented, we must ensure that basic survival needs are met. Without such essentials as food, housing, and transportation, people remain trapped in poverty. Others wanted to assure that Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security are available for future generations. And others focused on, we need jobs, jobs, jobs. And one of the quickest way to get back people back to work is investment in infrastructure. A majority of leaders stated that we could cut Pentagon spending without loss of security and use the savings to fund the things that would improve the lives of citizens and improve our economy. Participants were in agreement that we have a huge challenge with no simple answers in attempting to change budget and revenue policies. Most agreed that change must come from massive grassroots efforts. We heard over and over again that money in politics is very influential. Those with money are influencing decisions in their favor. Most agreed that it is important to get big money out of politics. Many mentioned campaign finance reform. One participant clearly summed up what we heard from so many. There is a need for civility and inclusivity. We need to prioritize the common good for the benefit of all. We must all ask ourselves, how are our values reflected in the laws and spending priorities? Several participants said we need to counter the current narrative. Government is bad, less government is good. People need to understand the good that government has done and can do, how we have all benefited from good government. These key findings are listed in the executive summary, which you can review on your own. I would like to suggest that these findings can be the basis for a different story about public policy in our community. The reality is that poverty is increasing, that many low-income and even middle-income people live very tenuous lives, maintaining their economic status. That cutting social programs to save funds today is short-sighted. That society claims to have and represent a moral stand, but we do not. The story is that if someone works hard, that they should have a living wage. They should be able to support themselves in their and their families. The story should be that government can and has done, enacted good policy that has benefited the community, and it should do so again. The story is that wealthy citizens should just pay their fair share and not shirk their responsibility, and that we can institute these policies if we work together. Okay, so here's, though, the realities in the headlines today. On one slide, Kansas has huge budget deficits caused by tax cutting, resulting in huge cuts to education and social services and programs, and so-called welfare reform, now sort of telling, I think you can, the poor will only be able to get $25 from their welfare cards. They can't use it for meat or steaks. The Missouri legislature is proposing budget cuts to social programs as well, even when cutting those programs will result in the loss of millions in federal government money going to Missouri. The U.S. House has just passed a bill to repeal the estate tax, which now only affects 2 in 1,000 estates. This is estates of individuals who have more than $5.4 million. This will result in a loss of $270 billion to federal revenue over 10 years. I thought about, well, maybe we should kind of put those restrictions on that money, that these billionaires can't buy Ferraris and second homes or something. We don't want them to use it in inappropriate ways. And finally, the headline in the center is about a study by a Princeton and Northwestern researcher that looked at 1,800 different policy initiatives between 1981 and 2002 and found that rich, well-connected individuals on the political scene now steer the direction of the country regardless of or even against the will of the majority of voters. So the U.S. is more an oligarchy than a democracy is what they found. So what we are calling for is that we can counter the millions that the elites are putting into politics, but it will take millions of us to do so. We may not have the dollars that they have, but we have the people. Thomas Jefferson once said, "When the people are well informed, they can be trusted with their own government. Whenever things get so far wrong as to attract their notice, they may be relied on to set them to rights." So we need to be about helping our fellow citizens to be informed. So those who know what is happening, who understand or experience the suffering and hardship of economic inequality in Kansas City Metro and communities across the country, who know how public policy and budgets and tax policies are enriching the powerful and making the rest of us suffer, low wages and insufficient education, inadequate health care, poor housing, and on, those of us must step up and counter the influence of the elites. We call upon you to speak up, to lift up your voices and those that help others lift up their voices, to inspire others to speak. Every time someone calls for a tax cut, say no. When they say we have to cut education, or youth and senior programs, or housing, or Head Start, or Medicaid, say no. We must all use all existing means, letters to the editor, emails and calls to elected officials, call-ins to talk shows, social media, and we need to create new methods for getting our story out. Some of you may be familiar with this quote, inspired by Unitarian Universalist minister Theodore Park and stated by Dr. Martin Luther King. So they told us that the moral universe, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. We invite you to join with us to change the austerity narrative and tax policies and help bend that arc towards justice maybe a little bit sooner. We invite you to sign up for on the comment cards, if you'd please fill those out and give us your feedback and sign up to be involved. We invite you to the next Move the Money planning meeting, which is on May 14th, Thursday at 5:30 at the American Friends Service Committee and Penn Valley Friends meeting at 4405 Gillum Road, not far from here. There's another forum scheduled at the Casey Oasis in June, and then we'll be discussing these issues at the Empower Missouri First Friday Forum in August, which that used to be MASW. Again, more information can be found at this bit.ly website or at the American Friends Service Committee Kansas City webpage. So I thank you for your attention and for your interest, and encourage you to speak out in whatever ways that you can. And now we can have questions or comments.
Taking a short break, you're listening to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI, listening to Ira Harrett talking about the American Friends Service Committee's Move the Money Listening Project and what they heard when they talked with at least 46 community leaders here in Kansas City. Let's do some messages. We'll come back with the question and answer segment of our show tonight.
I'm always intrigued by what's behind the curtain that I can't see. At the beginning of your presentation, you said that the community leaders and organizers were very forthcoming, but there were some questions they did not feel comfortable talking about. Could you give us an idea of what those might be?
I guess there are some leaders that were associated with not-for-profits that fundraise, And so because of that, very few, but there were some that seemed to shy away from discussing things that might offend their funders. There was one entity, one person who, Doug from the Legal Aid, who's the empowerment of that organization does not allow them to speak for changes in government policy directly. So that was another example.
Thank you, Ira. I had the chance to hear this talk twice now. You use the term leaders quite frequently. I find myself wondering, based on my past experience, what the criteria is for being called a leader. Because frankly, the list of symptoms does not really bell the cow, which is the deliberate effort going back to 1970 to demolish the middle class gains after World War II. And I'd love to come on May 5th and talk about organizing to actually take that on, but I'm concerned that I've been to an earlier version of this meeting where it just is another round robin discussion of the laments. So could you say something about where the leadership is going to come from? Jefferson took for granted, having fought the Revolutionary War, that there's a time to go to the battlements when he made the statement you quoted. I'm not seeing that kind of leadership with 11% turnout and no viable alternative for mayor of Kansas City, Missouri. So we need some help if we're going to step up.
I'm very sympathetic to your concern. I think one of the dynamics that exists in our country is that progressives have been falling behind in many ways, and that there is a huge infrastructure in place that support the right, and we can continue to kind of fight today's battle without kind of a view of tomorrow's battle. But I think we have to build the infrastructure, which includes changing kind of worldview. Right now, the right has been very successful at propagating the stories, the kinds of stories that I had discussed earlier. And unfortunately, many of the general public have kind of bought in, at least in part, to those stories. So we have to somehow be so loud and so vocal in so many different ways that the whole landscape changes. The leaders that we spoke with are leaders mostly in the fields of education, social services, community organizing. So they are working in those spheres. We specifically have the intention of trying to work with them to bring their energies, at least those that are able, to focus on the problems and the issues that we're talking about. And so it may be a step forward and a step together that will come from this effort.
I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit more on the participants. First of all, maybe who some of them were, but also how they felt about being approached. Were there people, did you feel people were doing this as a favor to the American Friends Service Committee? Were there some that were very grateful to have people actually listening to them? And then also, were there people who declined to participate that you approached?
By and large, people were very pleased to speak with us. And in fact, after listening sessions, people thanked us for Many thanked us for conducting this project. That I think some are just kind of working as hard and as fast and as furiously as they can to address the real problems that are impacting communities today. And when you're so absorbed in that kind of work, of whether you're working with homeless people and there's you're trying to get homeless people off the street and help increase their capacity and ability and get them into jobs and stable housing situations, or whether you're a pastor that keeps on seeing community members come to you for need of today, that sometimes it's hard for them to focus on you know, the longer term, larger picture kinds of issues. And so this was provided them with an opportunity to speak to those larger issues and to consider participating in ways to address them. So on the webpage listed here is a list of all 46 community leaders coming from groups like Concerned Clergy, Ad Hoc, El Centro, Restart, Samuel Rogers Health Center, Jackson County Mental Health Fund, Crosslines, Bishop Sullivan Place, KC Healthy Kids, Full Employment Council, KC AFT, Truman Hospital, Black Healthcare Coalition. So there was quite a broad kind of group of people that we listened to.
Good morning. Thank you for your work. I'm totally down with you on the need to change our spending priorities, particularly at the federal level and our global military empire. But I think we need to acknowledge that our American way of life as we know it is utterly dependent on that global military empire, our consumer way of life. Now, I think changing that would be to the good as well, but we need to recognize that our global military empire serves to keep governments in place that make sure we get the free flow of resources into the global economy and the free flow of cheaply made products from all over the world and oil flowing, which the whole economy is utterly dependent on. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that, Ira.
Yes. You know, it's there's not one problem, and everything is interconnected, and so we need to be working on our own consumptive habits, on our use of getting ourselves ending our addiction to fossil fuels and just the use of energy in general. So that's all going to happen, needs to happen, but it needs to also, these other things need to happen. So there need to be political solutions, there need to be lifestyle solutions as well.
Kind of along those same lines, and maybe this is a devil's advocate question, but were any of the respondents concerned about ways to increase personal responsibility to avoid some of the traps that people had found themselves in, or was that not something that ever came up?
It came up a little, and I think, actually I've reflected on that. In the past, I've sometimes run across pastors in low-income communities that really focus on that. And in part that has to do with, you know, what's gonna help this person in my congregation next week. They can't wait for minimum wage to be raised. You know, they have to eat and pay the rent and so forth. So there definitely is, there were some that focused on more on that than others. But I think there was a general understanding that that this is a systemic problem, that even if you try to be very responsible, you know, if you're working 50, 60 hours a week at a fast food job, you know, you may not be able to pay the rent. You may erroneously go to a payday loan company and then kind of get sucked up into that kind of negative cycle. I remember speaking with Sister Berta at Operation Breakthrough, and she said over the years there have been very, very few individuals that she worked with who weren't working as hard as they could. That the idea of a lazy, poor person that, you know, has created their own problem, you know, wasn't the reality in her experience.
Ira, thanks for all your good work over the many years. I'd like to touch on one thing that was mentioned earlier about nonprofits. I work for a nonprofit and I volunteer for another one. And I don't know how common this is, but this dynamic I've noticed between the kind of folks that a lot of times fund social service nonprofits can be the kind of persons that also support legislative agendas that are in the opposite direction of what a lot of us would like to see. So just in my own experience with the nonprofits I've been involved with, I see that very strongly, and I don't know how universal that is. Maybe you have a comment on that.
I can think of one person that it seemed to be a major the concern of not saying something to offend these not-for-profits who are seeking this other kind of public policy agenda. I can think of one session where that seemed to be restricting the person's comments, and basically the person wasn't commenting on, you know, raising taxes and things like that. Or I think that they didn't talk about military spending, that they were focused on their promoting their concern or discussing the issues around their concern. It's challenging when you're dependent upon people with lots of money, and those people are making their money by supporting laws and policies and tax policies that are benefit them. You know, big corporations have historically made contributions to lift up and improve their image in the community and in public at the same time while they are doing terrible things policy-wise or even just with their workers. So I think it's a perennial problem and is a problem of the concentration of wealth. If there wasn't such a great and increasing concentration of wealth, that we wouldn't have that kind of situation. And back during the Eisenhower years, the top tax bracket had a 90% tax rate because people recognized that the accumulation of wealth was a negative for society and that it would just lead to unhealthy speculation. So, you know, we've come a long way in terms of what the public believes and in terms of wealth. And some of you may remember a program, I forget if it was 60 Minutes or 2020 or something, that was raising up the value of greed. And we have very strange values that are running through our society.
Did the question of nonprofits, 501c3s, the number of them, and the revenue that does not come in because of that ever come up?
Do you mean that the tax breaks that wealthy people had to by donating to those?
No, I'm talking about the break, if you want to call it that, that nonprofits have. Suppose all the 501c3s started paying just property taxes. Do you understand my...
Yeah, so at least for the local community, there's a loss of revenue from property taxes or some other things, other kinds of sales tax that they don't have to pay. It didn't come up in our sessions, and it wasn't the focus of any of our questions. I would just say in general that sales tax in particular is a very regressive tax, and that taxing income and wealth would be, you know, much more just.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ira Harrett talking about lifting up community voices on this week's All Souls Forum. This program was recorded on Sunday, April the 19th of 2015 at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri. This program is produced and edited each week for broadcast by Barry Lee. Thank you to Rita Norton and the staff at All Souls for their help in producing this program each week. The music you hear at the beginning and ending of the show is composed and performed by Kansas City composer Fred Potter. Don't forget, you can access these broadcasts on KKFI's podcast page right on our website at www.kkfi.org. We're pleased to know that the All Souls Forum is one of the most listened to and downloaded shows on our podcast page. So thank you. Tune in again next week for another All Souls Forum right here on KKFI. We hope you'll join us then.